This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Abby Lincoln is one of the most emotionally gripping singers I know. That emotional depth comes through whether she's singing jazz standards or her own songs. Lincoln started her career in the 50s on the supper club circuit. She left that world after meeting the innovative drummer Max Roach, who she later married. In 1957, they made the first in a series of records together, which featured Lincoln backed by such jazz luminaries as Sonny Rollins and Eric Dolphy. Lincoln's songs began to reflect her growing involvement in the civil rights and Black Pride movements. Since 1990, she's recorded for Verve. From her latest album, this is the Frank Lesser song, Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year.
Spring will be a little late this year. A little late arriving in our lonely world over here. 'Cause you have left us, and where is our April of old? You have left us, and winter continues cold, as if to say, spring.
Abby Lincoln, welcome to Fresh Air. Tell me why you wanted to record Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year.
I chose Spring Will Be a Little Late because it really is a brilliant song. It's wonderfully written, and it had the thought that I wanted to bring to the album, one of the thoughts. It's something that I think a lot of people feel, a little disappointment and anxious for another time in our lives.
The song that we just heard is a standard, but in concert and on records, a lot of the songs that you sing are your own songs now.
Yes.
And I remember I interviewed you once a bunch of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, and I remember very clearly one of the things that you said. You said that at a certain point you stopped singing songs that had lines like, he beats me too, in it, because you felt that you lived the lyrics that you sang and that you couldn't afford to sing abusive lyrics like that anymore.
Yes, well, I know that Billie Holiday, I was following in her tradition, you know, and singing the songs that I'd heard her sing, and Dinah Washington and some of the other singers. But when I discovered that, as you said, a song is a prayer, and sometimes it's your own reality, and maybe it will be your reality in the future if you continue to sing it. I never experienced a relationship where a man beat me. And I thought, what am I singing this for? I don't want to live this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let me play one of the songs that you wrote that you recorded on one of your recent albums. And this is called I've Got Thunder
Yes.
And It Rings. it's a great song.
Thank you.
Tell me something about writing it, about what you wanted to say about yourself in this song.
Well, there's a complaint about the woman, about the female, you know, especially about Black women. I don't know. I guess it's the same thing for all the women. But if you express yourself, they say you talk too much. And you don't know how to be feminine, and you're a drag, you know? So I said, listen, this is all true. So run, because I'm not changing anything. I'm everything that you say I am. So don't come around here, because love is an emotion that'll move you to do things, to say things, and to be things, whether it pleases anybody or not.
Well, let's hear Abby Lincoln singing her own song, I've Got Thunder and It Rings. And this is from her album, The World is Falling Down.
Some folks talk about my power. Some folks say I'm wild and strong. Others say my style of living makes a man go wrong. start coming. I got thunder and it rings. Cause love is an emotion. It'll move you to do things. Do things. Do things. Love is an emotion. It'll move you to do. Some folks talk about the love they're feeling. Talk about.
That's Abby Lincoln singing her own song. When you started your career as a singer, you worked as a glamorous nightclub singer, evening gowns, the whole bit. As a matter of fact, one writer described you as being packaged as the Black Julie London. Do you think that that's appropriate?
No, they used to compare me to Lena Horne. At that time, everybody was trying to be beautiful as Lena Horne.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Eartha Kitt, who was supposed to be a kitten. And you were supposed to have a glamorous image. And there was Marilyn Monroe. It was Marilyn. I wore a dress that they said she wore in a film called The Girl Can't Help It.
It was rock and roll film.
Yeah, it was a fluke, really. And for the first time, I was using my physical look for to attract attention to me, and it was a claim to fame. And it wasn't anything that I'd ever done before, because we were taught not to do that anyway. It's vanity. And so it was brought to me. It wasn't anything I thought of to do on my own. You know, some guys who were, who were very appreciative and ambitious for a career for me and thought I could make a lot of money as a personality and as a singer, as long as I made peace with the fact that they said I couldn't sing.
Oh, they didn't like your singing?
They did. They told me I wasn't really a great singer at all. I just looked good, you know?
That's really funny.
It is. Now, but...
right now, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But I suffered from it. Well, it caused me some problems.
Did it make you insecure to have the people who were managing you think that you weren't very good at what you did?
Well, yes, it didn't help me any. I remember saying once to this beautiful man, he was a great songwriter and taught me a lot. And I said to him, you know, I have a feeling you people are robbing me of my individuality. He said to me, you don't have any individuality, but you will if you take direction. Well, he forgot who he was talking to, because he's the one. He was one of the ones who told me that I could really think. And he had all this admiration for me. But anyway, all of that is in the past. I wouldn't give up any of it, because I learned how to be whatever it is I am now.
Did it affect your relationship with men to be the sexy kitten on stage?
Because they believe, men and women, we all believe what we see on the screen. And people thought I was this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I played that role. Why would they think anything else? So I went from there to this warrior woman. And that befuddled everybody, too. Because they thought, oh, why don't you shut up? I think I've had that said to me more than anything in the world over the years when I was younger. You talk too much. Shut up. You know, don't rock the boat. Even though they're miserable, people are miserable, they'll tell you this, but you're not supposed to say anything about it. So when I discovered that there was the world of the artist, it saved my life, because I could strive to be individual and as best as I could be. I didn't have to have money. I didn't have to have anything except my life. And I went for that, and I'm glad I did.
How did you discover the world of the artist from the world of the supper club?
Max Roach had a lot to do with it. He wasn't the only artist I met, though, actually. There was Benny Carter, who I did my first album with, and Bob Russell, who named me Abby Lincoln, was a great artist and songwriter. But Max brought me to this music that they call jazz and introduced me to these great musicians and singers. who I probably wouldn't have met, Thelonious Monk and John Coltrane. I didn't get a chance to meet Charlie Parker because he passed away before I got to New York City.
My guest is singer Abby Lincoln. She has a new album called Devil's Got Your Tongue. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is singer Abby Lincoln. You said that when you discovered jazz in the world of the artist that you turned into a woman warrior.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you were like as the woman warrior then.
Well, the first thing I did, I just started to wear my hair natural. That was a crime in 1958. A black woman wasn't supposed to show that she had hair like she had. It was a disgrace to have this kind of hair that they call all these crazy names. So I just glorified my existence. And I said, this is me, and this is my beautiful self, you know? The beauticians thought I was going to ruin their business. They did. They said I was after their business, and a lot of people said things. And I started singing songs that were more social. I started writing songs. And I found songs that would express what was in my heart. Because, you know, Billie Holiday was like this. She didn't sing inane things. She sang about the life that she lived. She may have been masochistic and all these things. But she sang Strange Fruit. And God bless the child that's got his own. It's the same reason they remember Bessie Smith. Because these were social singers. They weren't just... It wasn't self-aggrandizement standing in front of people saying how great I am. But they were singing songs about the people's lives.
I want to play a recording that you made of a song very associated with Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
And it's a very masochistic song, Don't Explain. But it's a beautiful song, nevertheless, you know.
Yes, forgiving.
Yeah, and it's such a beautiful melody, and I love the way you sing it.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit before we hear it about the influence Billie Holiday had on you. I think you're a very different singer than she is, although I hear the influence that she's had on you. But tell me a little bit about that influence, and also if you knew her, if you met her.
I met her when I was about 23 in Honolulu, and she came to the bar where I was working. It was probably to get away from where she was working because the place was jammed with people. Anyway, she came to see me a couple of times, and I'd run to catch her show, and I saw her magic on the stage, this beautiful woman who would stand perfectly still with her hands like, she was like a doll, and her eyes would slide from one side of the room to the other, and the room was perfectly still. And... I fell further in love with her. This was my... Because I was singing a lot of songs that she sang already that I learned on the radio, from the radio. But Billie Holiday was always honest. She didn't bend a note to make her voice sound good. It was in conversation that she sang. And she was sincere and honest, and she never made a record for money. She never raped anybody's career, and to me, she's the greatest singer of her era. I'm not the only one who feels this.
So do you think what you learned from Billie Holiday wasn't how to phrase as much as it was that you should be yourself?
Yes. Yes.
Let's hear your recording of Don't Explain, back from 1957, from your album That's Him, your first jazz recording.
Hush now.
It's Abby Lincoln singing Don't Explain. You and Max Roach got married during the period that you were recording together.
Yes.
How did you like married life? And I'm wondering if if your career ended up taking a back seat at all during
no,
your marriage.
No, he's a great artist and would never ask another artist to do that.
Uh-huh.
But marriage is the pit. You know why?
Why?
Because I'm a polygamous woman. I don't want him to be everything to a man. And I don't want him trying being everything to me. He's got his mother. I want to know if he loves his mother first. I want to know if he loves his first wife. If he got along with her or if he gets along with her. I just don't like this approach to marriage, and I will never do it again. I don't want to be that to anybody. I don't want anybody coming into my bedroom as if it's theirs. I have to have my own space, and I expect him to have his own. If he doesn't know how to have his own space, I don't want him around me.
So never again.
No, not that style.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. One of the songs of yours that you started singing when you began recording again in the late 70s was a song called Throw It Away. The lyric is about how you can throw something away because you can never lose a thing if it belongs to you.
I found this song. I used to throw the changes.
In the
I Ching. The I Ching, yeah. Oscar Brown Jr. introduced me to this oracle. So... And one day I threw this change and I heard this thought. So I just wrote it. I elaborated on it and wrote it.
Were you thinking of things that you thought you had thrown away?
But we all have to throw things away, you know? I had thrown away my marriage, my career, everything. Because this is the way it is. And we eventually you have to throw your body away. You die and you can't take it with you. So there's nothing here that really belongs to us, hardly, except for work. I know that is mine. Your children are not even yours. There's very little that belongs to us in this world. And a song is mine. If 100 years from today, if anybody hears the song, they'll know that I wrote it. So... I figure those are the things that are mine and not somebody.
When you sing now, do you feel comfortable on stage?
Yes. For many years, it's the most comfortable thing in the world to do. I'm not nervous. I'm not scared. I come to do something, to say something, and it's my first nature.
On the liner notes of one of your early records... Someone quotes Thelonious Monk as having said to you the first time he saw you sing, "I like the way you stand."
No, he never said anything like that to me. Thelonious Monk wouldn't say anything like that to anybody in the first place. He doesn't give a damn about the way you stand. Excuse me, Lord. Thelonious Monk said to me, after listening to the words that I had written to his song, Blue Monk, he said to me, he came to where I was and whispered in my ear, "Don't be so perfect." And I said to Max Roach, "You know what Thelonious said to me?" He said, "Don't be so perfect." What did he mean? And Roach said, "He means make a mistake." And I didn't know what either one of them were talking about.
So how do you interpret that now?
It means that you must reach for something. You have to reach for the sky. If you don't make it, at least you reached for it. So your voice cracked, but you reached for it. You don't play safe. It's not safe, Jones. You take a chance on making a mistake. That's what they meant. And I do. I've learned to sing like that. Because I'm the human being, and even if it doesn't work, it's not wrong. If I didn't achieve what I meant to, it's okay. It's all right, because, I mean, I tried for it. Yeah.
Well, I just saw you sing in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it was a great performance.
Thank you.
And I don't know, it seems like when I see you on stage that you really are feeling the material that you sing. You're not falling back on professionalism or show business or anything. You seem to really be reaching inside each time you perform.
That's true. It's the way of the music. Thelonious Monk would be drenched in perspiration and absolutely possessed. Nina Simone, Billie Holiday, and Charlie Parker, even though I didn't see him, but I hear it in his music. It's a possession. It's the muse. They talk about the muse. I'm possessed of a muse, and I belong to her, and she belongs to me. And as long as I sing and I am real and I do nothing to betray the trust, this is what I do. And it's a wonderful experience to come to the stage and to know that everything is all right.
It sounds like you think that if you betrayed the trust of your muse, that your muse would abandon you.
Yes, they do. They don't need anybody. They can sing around, whistle around the corner. They can babble in the brook. They don't need anybody. If you don't come real, they don't come and visit you. They come to visit sincerity and innocence and that one. You have to have this spirit yourself to know that we are great people, and this is part of our life. This is part of our spirit, music, and to sing with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind, the way they do in the churches. That's where Aretha Franklin came from, where they sing for the reverence of the gods that they choose to worship. I didn't come from the church, and I see God through my mother and my father and my relatives. And when I come to the stages with reverence for myself, for my life.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
It's my pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Abby Lincoln, her new album's called Devil's Got Your Tongue. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.